We shall turn now to the consideration further of the book of Job. And we turn presently to the beginning of the sixth chapter. But to understand the connection, perhaps we might read from the latter part just now of the chapter 5, verse 27. Lo, this, we have searched it, so it is, hear it, and know thou it for thy good. These are the words, the concluding words of this particular speech, and the part of Eliphaz to Job. Eliphaz has taken it upon himself to be the first of Job's three friends to address him. We have noted how distressing the circumstances were that these men didn't even recognize Job, and they were certain that in reality they'd never properly known him. They had thought he was an outstanding, righteous and godly man, and now when they see the hand of God upon him, they're concluding, well, God is exceedingly angry with Job about something, and he's afflicting him for a reason. And we have to try and convince Job to not only submit to the ways of God, the actions of God against him, but we, as friends, have to endeavor to bring Job to his senses that he might acknowledge his sin and then he may find mercy with God. And Eliphaz has used various arguments that ought to, and he will of course speak again, and he uses various arguments in order to persuade Job to take seriously what he has to say, because as far as Eliphaz is concerned, this would be to Job's benefit. As he says here in chapter 5, verse 27, lo, this, we have searched it out. So it is. It's fact, Job. Hear it. Listen, Job, to it. And know thou it. Think of it seriously, Job. What we say is well intended. Know it, be persuaded of it, be convinced of it, for thy good. It's very obvious that at this present moment in time, Eliphaz means very well. He does not mean any harm whatever against Job. But Job is of a mind, you men simply don't understand things. You simply haven't grasped the circumstances, the situation, what really is happening. Now, we said last week these men were God-fearing men. They were trying their utmost to benefit Job when they entered into conversation with him. They'd come to comfort him. They didn't succeed, but that was their intention. Now, how does Job react? That's the real question. Now, as we go through the book of Job, you will see the major part of the whole book is taken up with conversations and arguments between Job and these three friends and then young Elihu. Most of the book is entirely taken up with this. One of his friends makes a speech. Job reacts to it. Then another speech is made to Job. Then Job reacts and on it goes. Now you and I have to ask, well, What's the purpose of this book as far as I personally am concerned? What am I supposed to learn from this book? And I believe there are a number of very, very important lessons that we must learn. And if we come to the end of considering this book and we haven't learned them, we will have failed to understand what the book is all about. And one of the things that we will, I trust, learn and learn well is this: the danger of interfering in the work of God when He is at work in the life, the experience of one of His children. I've seen it happen so often. And some evidence seems to appear. God is at work in that man or that woman's life. Seems to be God is convicting that young man of sin. God is working in the heart of that young woman. Now let's get in and do something to hasten the work on. And we go along, we give them a pat on the back. I'm praying for you. Here's a little text for you. Here's some words of encouragement. And we begin to poke our nose into God's business. It's one of the disasters. And Christians think, oh well, we've always got to be active. We've always got to be doing. And we've always got to be speaking. When we don't, God was at work in the life of Job for a very good reason. Now these men, they also thought that. Job was convinced of it. They were convinced of it. But they did not understand what God was doing. Job himself didn't understand it fully. But we will see the heartache and the pain, the unnecessary heartache and pain caused because these men with good intentions interfered in the work of God. And you see, one of the things you see when you go through all the chapters, all the arguments, all the bitter things that are said, after it all, young Elihu speaks in anger. He's angry with Job, and he's angry with Job's three friends. And the reason he is because Job has endeavored to justify himself rather than God, Elihu thinks. And then these three men, with all that they've said, they haven't changed Job's mind one iota. They haven't brought any spiritual benefit to Job whatever. Until then, we come near the end of the book, and after they've all finished saying what they have to say, we come to chapter 38. Then the Lord answered Job. Then the Lord answered Job. The Lord let them all say their piece and all make their efforts and all speak of him and speak to Job. And apparently represent the mind of God. Try to convince Job, you better listen, Job, because this is why God's doing this. This is why God did that, and so on. And in no time at all, Job completely changes once God speaks. And after all the arguments and all the debates and all the bitterness that arises. God spoke to Job, and in no time at all, Job's demeanor, Job's attitude, Job's disposition completely changes, and Job says, I'm speaking no more. I will lay my hand upon my mouth, and I will not speak in God's presence, and in no time at all, Job's relationship with God is completely changed. And that's why I say it is one of the important lessons that we ought to learn. We kind of think God isn't capable of doing things without us interfering. We have to come along and have our input. And all we do is muddy the waters and cause confusion so often. When God is at work, we better step back. Now here, Eliphaz uses arguments in his efforts to convince Job to listen to him. Now we note it, chapter 4, Eliphaz approaches very gently and he's conscious Job's in a sorry state. Verse 2 of chapter 4, if we essay to commune with thee, will thou be grieved? Job, can you listen to us? We would like to help you. We want to speak to your comfort, to your benefit. We just have to speak. We can't look in your Job. We can't see the state you're in and not say something, your misery as such. We just have to say something. That's what Eliphaz thinks. And then to convince Job to give attention in chapter 4 again, verse 12, he says to Job, now a thing was secretly brought to me, and we considered this voice that obviously was the voice of God. In verse 17, shall mortal man be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his maker? And so on. And surely Job must give attention now, because Eliphaz is saying, I didn't make this up myself, Job. This isn't even the mind, the wisdom of the ancients. God spoke to me. These are his own words. And you find them quoted, of course, in the New Testament, which is evidence in itself they are from God. But then, here in the end of the chapter 5, lo, this, as we already noted, we have searched it. We have searched it. We are speaking the facts, the truth. Job, hear it. Because we have sought the evidence to substantiate what we're saying. We have endeavored to find the proof, the evidence, that what we're telling you, the advice we're giving you, Job, is good advice. It's sound advice. Hear it, Job. If you go then over to chapter 15 and you find Eliphaz is speaking again. And remember what he said. We looked at it last week. Behold, Job, chapter 4, thou hast instructed many. Thou hast strengthened the weak hands, Job. Thy words have upholden him that was falling. And he's reminding Job of his godly, charitable, caring, compassionate actions. And it's as though Eliphaz is saying, Job, we cannot forget how you have helped others. Therefore, we desire to help you now when you're in distress. This is all going to change, and change very quickly. And here, in the chapter 15, Eliphaz is speaking again. Listen to what he says now. Should a wise man utter vain knowledge and fill his belly with the east wind? Should he reason with unprofitable talk, or with speeches wherewith he can do no good? Yea, thou castest off fear and restrainest prayer before God. My, my. That must have been painful for Job. Job, your relationship to God isn't right, Job. You've stopped praying. There's something wrong. Verse 5. For thy mouth uttereth thine iniquity, and thou choosest the tongue of the crafty. Thine own mouth condemneth thee, and not I. Yea, thine own lips testify against thee. This is Eliphaz, who introduced the whole conversation, the beginning of all the great debate, so compassionately it seems. You see what's happening now? The whole scene is changing. There's a very bitter tone coming into the whole conversation between them. Verse 7. Art thou the first man that was born? Who do you think you are, Job? You think you're the first man that ever lived, and all wisdom begins with you? Wast thou made before the hills? Hast thou heard the secret of God? And dost thou restrain wisdom to thyself? Then he says this, what knowest thou that we know not? You don't know anything more than us, Job. What understandest thou that is not in us? You are not smarter than us, Job. You don't have more knowledge than us. And then here's his real strong argument, verse 10. With us, Job, are both the gray-headed and very aged men, much elder than thy father. Job, we come to you with authority. We speak to you wisely, but we speak with authority. We speak because we've heard in the night visions, the truth from God himself. We speak to you, Job, because we've tested what the truth is and discovered we can speak with confidence, because we're not coming with mere theories. Job, it's your wisdom to listen, because we have the ancients with all their wisdom. They're older even than your father, Job. And when we speak, therefore, Job, you ought to pay attention. Now listen to what happens. Verse 1 of chapter 6. Note the opening word from Job. But Job answered. Now you will see three times throughout the book of Job the repetition of that one word, and it's always Job. But Job answered. You will find generally it's chapters begin, the conversations begin, then answered Bildad, then answered Job, then answered Eliphaz, and Eliphaz said, or whatever. And it was as though they were arguing backwards and forwards. But Job becomes absolutely so exasperated that you have these outbursts. But Job answered and said, Now look at the connection. The last verse of the previous chapter. Lo, this, we have searched it out. So it is. Hear it and know thou it for thy good. But Job answered. He's not going to take it. He refuses to take it. Eliphaz, you just don't understand. And I just can't listen. Oh, that my grief, he says, were thoroughly weighed, and my calamity laid in the balances thereof. You just don't understand, Eliphaz, what I'm going through. You just can't fathom it. You see, in chapter 16, we looked at it before, but it is worth turning to. Job answered and said, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are ye all. You're not giving me comfort, you're giving me misery. And then, verse 3, what does he say? Shall be in words of an end. Are you ever going to keep quiet? Are you ever going to stop talking and give me peace and let me be at rest? Why do you keep going on and on? Verse 3 again, shall be in words of an end, or what emboldeth thee that thou answerest? I also could speak as ye do, if your soul were in my soul's stead. Well, if the situation was reversed and I was in your shoes and you were in my, I could talk like you. Because Eliphaz, you don't suffer my pain. Eliphaz, you haven't experienced my loss. Eliphaz, you don't know what my very body feels like. You see, you can talk, Eliphaz, and you men can talk, but you don't know. You're not engaged with God in the circumstances that I find myself in. And that is one of the things that the book of Job teaches us. How little we really understand of what God is doing in the experience of another one of his children. And we can imagine ourselves to be in a position, because we've got knowledge of this and that, and to be able to pontificate. That's what they were doing as far as Job was concerned. And Job was saying, you're just adding to my misery. I wish you would all, every one of you, just keep quiet. But they refused, of course. They had so much to say. And you see again in chapter 21 of the book, Job again, irritated, and he, verse 1 of chapter 21, Job answered and said, no matter what they say, it brings no relief whatever to his spirit. But Job answered and said, hear diligently my speech, and let this be your consolations. Suffer me that I may speak. You can see how irritated Job is. Again, in the chapter 26, you see at the beginning of the chapter again, this is the third time, but Job answered and said, how hast thou helped him that is without power? How hast thou, verse 3, counseled him that hath no wisdom? All your accusations, well, what have you really taught me? Nothing. And then again, look at chapter 32. Verse 1, so these three men ceased to answer Job. They gave up in the end. Why? Because he was righteous in his own eyes. It was as though they concluded, we're only wasting our time. Job is as stubborn as a mule. You can't get through to him. You just cannot get through to Job. And therefore, his wrath, because he was righteous, then was kindled the wrath of Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, and we've mentioned it, verse 3, and against Job's three friends, because they had found no answer, and yet had condemned Job. Imagine. After they've said everything and presented all their arguments, remember what they agreed to do. Chapter 2, they made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. And young Elihu has listened to them. He's listened to Job's reactions and responses, the arguments from each side, and he's angry that so much time has been taken up with talk and nothing has been accomplished. It's all just been, as far as he can see, an entire waste of time, and his anger is kindled because they've condemned Job. They said they made an agreement to come to comfort him. What do? They condemned him. And Elihu then waited till Job had spoken because they were elder than he. When Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of these three men, then his wrath was kindled. Because he could see plainly, you know what you men have done. You have inflicted upon Job greater afflictions than he even had before you came near him. And you can see Job himself and Elihu obviously was listening to all this. You go back in the book of Job to the chapter 15 and there listen to what is said there in Job. Chapter 15, Job says, what you men know, I know, we all know basically the same facts. And yet, although their knowledge theoretically was the same, they were applying what they apparently knew in very different ways. In chapter 13, Job says, very much the same, lo, mine eye has seen this. Verse 1, mine ear hath heard and understood it. What ye know, the same do I know. Also, am I not inferior to you? And then in verse 4, ye are forgers of lies. Ye are all physicians of no value. You can see the temperature is rising all the time. They are getting angry with Job, and Job is becoming utterly exasperated with them. And the accusations are flying from each side. You see the conversation. Now the devil was behind it, we know all that. And he intended to bring Job to curse God. And yet you see in the midst of it all, Job is clinging to God, no matter how strong his language is, and it's pretty strong at times in the chapter we read, chapter 6. Look at what Job says, verse 4. The arrows of the Almighty are within me. I don't need any additional pain. I don't need you men to come with your arrows, because the arrows of the Almighty are within me, and the poison whereof drinketh up my spirit, the terrors of God do set themselves in array against me. You see, Job knew, God is dealing with me. Now, I don't know yet why. I don't understand yet why he's afflicting me the way he is. But I do know that his hand is in it. And here's what he has to say, verse 14, to these three friends, particularly Eliphaz, to him that is afflicted, pity should be showed from his friend. Pity should be shown. You've come here. You see me. You see the state I'm in. You can see, yes, and I admit it, God is dealing with me. And his arrows are piercing me sore, and my pain is real. But you have come along. And what have you done? You've added to my misery. It's as though Job is saying to these men, God has put me down and you are now kicking me. That's so often you see what happens. When we should be quiet and when we should be silent, we think we'll speak for God, as if God's arrows aren't sharp enough. As though his rod isn't heavy enough. As though God is not severe enough. Now look at what happens here in the experience of Job in this chapter 6. Verse 21, for now ye are nothing. Ye see my casting down. And are afraid. Then Job asked them something. Did I say, bring unto me, or give a reward for me of your substance? I've lost everything. Yes, I have. And I've suffered physically, psychologically, mentally, physically, materially. I have suffered great loss. But you men put it, you yourselves agreed you would come, you made an appointment, you would come to comfort me, you would come to console me, you would come commiserate with me. And then Job says, verse 22, did I say, bring unto me, did I ask you for anything? Did I send a message, look, I've lost everything, bring me some new herds. Bring me some new cattle. Bring me some of your riches and wealth and share it with me. Or give me a reward of your substance. I never asked you for anything. You came voluntarily. You came of your own accord. Verse 23, or deliver me from the enemy's hand, or redeem me from the hand of the Almighty. I never asked you to do anything. I never asked you to speak. That's what Job, this is how he's feeling. Well, if I had asked you for advice, if I had asked you, well, tell me what I should do or counsel me, fine, I would be ready to listen, but I never asked you for all the things you're saying. I never asked you for any help. Because I'm understanding God's arrows have pierced me and I'm in God's hand. And I want to know what God is doing. And I would prefer if you men would keep quiet and give me peace until I discover what God's purpose is. Now you will see as you go right throughout the whole book in general, you will see that, as I said, there are very bitter things said. Job did not sin with his mouth once. In all this, Job sinned not with his mouth. But when Job is finished with his brethren, he tells God, he makes a confession to God, and he says he will keep quiet. I have spoken, he says, I will speak no more. And it comes home to him. I've used my tongue unwisely. I have spoken against these brethren. Yes, they've spoken against me. Yes, they have condemned me. Yes, they have added to my misery. Yes, they've added to my sorrow. But I have spoken out of turn. And there, chapter 40, Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? Yes, I answered each one of these men. I answered every one of them, and I contended with them, and I refused to submit to them. But what does he say here? What shall I answer thee? That's why we stress the lesson that we must learn is not to interfere when God is at work. Because Job's response is completely different. What shall I answer thee? I will lay mine hand upon my mouth. He didn't say that to Eliphaz. He didn't say it to any of the comforters. He didn't say, you've silenced me. The arguments that you've put to me, the advice and the counsel you've given me, it's so persuasive, it's so convincing. Yes, I lay it to heart. I can see how profitable it is for me to listen. I'm not going to continue with the argument. You've convinced me. You've persuaded me. I can now see a light in the darkness. No, he goes on until the end, until he has exhausted them. And they've nothing more to say. He's exhausted every argument they've put up. You see how different it is when God speaks. You see how God, when he speaks, produces such a different reaction. What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth. Once have I spoken. I will not answer yea twice, but I will proceed no further. I'm finished. I've heard God's voice. That's the voice I've been longing to hear. That's the one I've been crying out after all along. It's as though all of a sudden there's a peace comes into the soul of Job. God has spoken. That's what I wanted all along. That's what I've been waiting for. That's what I've been longing for. Job answered and said, oh, that my grief were truly weighed. Then you would understand where I am, because I can't even express it. I can't even tell you of it. I cannot even comprehend it myself. And then you see what Job longs for. And it tells us something of how low he really is. The arrows of God, he says, are in him. God has set himself against him. And then in verse 8, he says, there's chapter 6, Oh, that I might have my request, and that God would grant me the thing that I long for, even that it would please God to destroy me, it means crush me, that he would let loose his hand and cut me off. You can see how Job, how low he is. He just wants God to take him out of this scene of time. It's as though he's telling God, I can't cope anymore. I can't take any more. I just can't. Take me away. Take me out of this misery. Take me away from this scene. Take me away from these men. Take me away from all this suffering. I have nothing left. I have no strength left. I just can't cope anymore. My only desire is it would be a relief if God would remove me from this scene of time. Now, there's not many of us, if any of us, have ever been there. Just no comfort whatever left in this world. Oh, you and I, we might think we've got some afflictions, we've got some trials, and we might well have. But Job can look to his right, to his left. He can look all around. And there's not a thing left in this world to comfort his soul. Not a thing. And he just wants God, take me away. Because there's nothing left for me here in this world. That tells us where Job is. And now these men are going to engage Job. And what do we find? From chapter 6 until God speaks, it's a war of words. It's a real war of words. Job warring against these men. And they're warring verbally against him. And yet it is all there for our edification, to teach us. And to teach us regarding the folly of much speaking, particularly when we don't understand what we're speaking about. And here's Job even asking these men, teach me, I will hold my tongue. I'll be silent. If you teach me, I'll hold my tongue and I'll be quiet. But Job speaks, and he says things that he's going to regret. And how often we do that. And therefore we are to learn from the book of Job not to interfere when God, when the evidence is there that God is dealing with one of his children. And we must also learn that we don't know as much as we think we know sometimes. And by our much speaking, we commit much sin. And by our much speaking, we can cause real pain. Job actually says, will ye break me in pieces with words? Will you break me in pieces with words? Words can be more devastating than even actions. And Job's listening to these men, breaking him in pieces. God has already broken him, and he's saying, are you going to completely decimate me, destroy me with your words? One thing then that should be clear. Learn to hold our tongues. But we shall leave it there. May the Lord bless to us these words.